south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Hey, who says miracles don't happen? Just yesterday, I was standing in a checkout line at a supermarket, and of course, everyone in line except me is jabbing away on their what's up. Then this 30-year-old guy in front of me, talking on his phone, gets all upset because apparently his battery went dead. Which means, of course, he lost his connection to the universe, and now he's all bored and fidgeting, hitting the buttons on his phone a few more futile times, trying to eke out another half percentage of battery, which got him even more pissed off. That didn't work. And his face had that look of a person completely lost. Then suddenly, with a blank stare, he dug into his pocket and pulled out a toothpick, stuck it in his mouth, rolled it around a bit, which reminds me, why is it A-OK to pull out a toothpick practically anywhere, especially in a restaurant? But if you were to dare to start flossing in public, man, people would look at you like you'd stepped in dog poop or something. By the way, did you know that technically once you've flossed or finished using your toothpick, those two implements are considered biohazards, hazardous waste, and by law must be deposited in a proper red container or bag with a hazardous waste symbol on it. So then why am I bringing up this particular digression? Well, because you longtime listeners have heard me talk about that book. It's called Three Felonies a Day, written by a pretty famous, I think, California judge. By the way, I have it as an ebook, so if you want it, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll ship it off to you. Anyway, every time I mention that book, I get some emails from people saying, Johnny, it's hard to believe three felonies a day. Seems like extreme hyperbole. How could that be? Well, guess what? I just gave you a nice example of a felony you didn't even know you committed, that you didn't even know existed. That would be improper disposal of hazardous waste, which you do every time you toss a toothpick or floss or even a cigarette butt in the garbage. That goes for ladies who wipe their lipstick off with a napkin, too. Technically, by law, hazardous waste, because according to the FDA and CDC, anything contaminated with saliva or blood or human body parts, which includes hair and nails too, is hazardous waste. That means every single beauty shop in the world is committing three felonies a day. And when you clip your nails and let them fly outside of your own home, unless you dispose of them properly, you're breaking the law. By the way, did you know every time you use a toothpick, floss, or even brush your teeth, you break a few blood vessels, no matter how small, so there's blood mixed in with that saliva. So even if you cough, sneeze, or spit on the ground, you're dispelling hazardous waste, red blood cells. Yep, if that stuff's not disposed of correctly, you're committing a crime. Of course, it's all beyond ridiculous. I mean, look, every time you go into a bathroom or public restroom, what are you doing in there? You're depositing hazardous waste. So then where are the red containers and hazardous waste symbols then? I know, you get the point. Just want to point out there's so many ridiculous laws, you're breaking them all the time. Remember, the U.S. tax law alone is 70,000+ pages. So anyway, this fidgeting Latino in front of me, whose cell phone had died, he'd gone through his pockets, pulled out a toothpick, got tired of chewing on that, tossed it on the ground, and then, here comes that miracle I was talking about, he picked up a bottle of cranberry juice and started to read the label. I almost had a heart attack. I know, it wasn't his first choice. Priorities, right? First and foremost, it's that cell phone. Second, it's picking your teeth, and thirdly, let's read the labels. But still, it was a minor miracle because that's the first time in my 30-plus years here in Latin America that I ever saw a Latino or Latina intentionally read a food label. Sure, they'll read the label to check the price, but to actually read it and see how much crap it contains? That's just not on the radar. So then what's that got to do with anything? Well, speaking of food labels, have you gotten the latest email blast concerning a class action suit against Bayer, producer of that infamous Roundup weed killer? Well, I just got that blurb promulgated by a bunch of ambulance-chasing lawyers. So here's the thing. You run into people all the time saying, if the food or whatever is FDA-approved, it's absolutely safe, because they test those things. They wouldn't let any bad crap out on the market now, would they? That's one way you know how Big Brother has brainwashed us. The FDA is supposed to be the watchdog healthcare agency, the good housekeeping seal of approval for food and drugs. The last word in health and fitness. And so if you've been shopping at farmers markets, eating organic, avoiding foods sprayed with herbicides, pesticides, and Roundup. Well, the average public, that'd be 90 to 95% of people, think you're wasting your dough because organic food at the farmer's market is always way more expensive than buying it at Walmart. I'm sure you've run into people who thought you were a little bit nuts on the eccentric side or just maybe a trendy kind of person. Hey, you know, I'm not a strict vegetarian or vegan, but I've been eating really healthy for at least 30 years now. Ever since my dad, who was a sportsman and a perfect physical specimen, died of a heart attack at age 54. His arteries were all clogged up because he loved junk food. Yet he was slim, not overweight at all, and was on only one med for high blood pressure. Anyway, when Latin Americans find out that I haven't eaten a fast food hamburger, hot dog, or anything like that for at least 30 years, nope, not one bite out of a Big Mac, Whopper, pre-digested synthetic taco at Taco Bell. Well, you can't believe the looks I get. Because remember, there's big lag time here in Latin America, and what you've heard about the dangers of junk food and high fructose corn syrup, well, a certain small percentage of the population up by you in the States have heeded that advice, along with a lot of you listeners, too. Whereas here in Latin America, almost no one has. In fact, I've never yet met a Latino or Latina who wouldn't chow down at a fast food joint, especially if you were paying. Obviously, they haven't a clue about GMOs or Roundup either. Now, I'm sure you have friends, family, and even enemies who've heard you maybe talk about the dangers of things like Roundup. And again, they give you that line that you're an alarmist because it's FDA approved. But then, how do you think they're going to react when they find out that in June of 2020, just a couple of months ago, Bayer, maker of Roundup, announced a blockbuster $10 billion settlement to resolve cancer lawsuits connected to its weed killer Roundup. And according to the court documents, that $10 billion covers something like 95,000 cancer cases attributed to Roundup. But that's not the end. Bayer still faces 30,000 plus cases from plaintiffs who have not agreed to participate in this settlement. Now, as much as I hate lawyers, especially ambulance chasing lawyers, I gotta say I'm rooting for this one. By the way, the details of this lawsuit state, you might be eligible for part of that $10 billion settlement if you've received a diagnosis of leukemia or lymphoma between 2001 and 2019, an 18-year period, and had been using one or more of these glyphosate-based weed killers with the brand names Aquamaster, Bronco, Campaign, Expedite, Fallowmaster, Honcho, Landmaster, Pondmaster, Protocol, Ranger, Roundup, and RT3. All previously 100% approved by the FDA, as well as the EPA and a number of other corrupt alphabet agencies. So anyway, if I got this email asking me to complete a one-minute form on the page to see if I'm eligible, which I'm not, by the way, but it does show me in an age of hopelessness that maybe, just maybe, there is some karma in the universe. But then generally, as it goes with these huge multinational corporations, they're primed and ready with dozens of scumbag lawyers to fight this stuff. So in the end, if you're one of the unfortunate victims, you might get some dough. But who's really going to make out are the lawyers. But you knew that already, right? The good news is I watched a real live Latino read a food label. So we've got that going for us in 2021. All right, speaking of emails, even if we weren't speaking of emails, just when I thought that Nigerian prince who's been emailing me about that $5 million he wants to share with me locked up in his bank account, because, you know, all he needs is a foreigner like me with a bank account to deposit it, and he's willing to split it with me. Well, just when I thought he disappeared off the face of the earth, I received an email from another upright and honorable Nigerian banker that shocked the hell out of me. Funny, but my mom and dad never mentioned this, maybe because they were embarrassed. Till I got this email, I didn't know I had a half-black Nigerian illegitimate uncle who just died in Lagos and named me as his sole heir to his $15 million fortune. Man, life keeps getting better all the time, huh? How amazing is that? Hey, I'm ecstatic, though I don't exactly know how I happen to have a half-black Nigerian illegitimate uncle. I guess it's the family's dirty little secret. Hey, but who am I to laugh at $15 million? And all I have to do is wire the lawyer a measly $5,000 for legal fees. God, I am the luckiest in the world, huh? You know what I'm going to do when I get that dough? Buy some Bitcoin, which brings us to this email from expat insider seminar alumnus Michael. He says, Johnny, seems like the U.S. government could make the crypto and Bitcoin markets come crashing down. You got thoughts on this? Then he sends me a link to this article from December 15th entitled, The U.S. government wants to ruin Bitcoin over Christmas. And the highlights of the article, it says the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, that's FinCEN, proposes a new Bitcoin and cryptocurrency regulation just as Bitcoin goes to all-time highs. They're proposing a law that says private digital wallet holders must identify themselves to exchanges, that's know your customer and all that, when making transactions with Bitcoin and other digital currencies. All right, then, so what's that mean, and will it kill Bitcoin and other cryptos? Well, you know, right now, you can make your cryptocurrencies almost completely anonymous by buying a hard wallet like a Nano or a Trezor and storing your crypto there. So it's completely anonymous if you want it to be, as long as you're holding it in one of those hard wallets. When you buy it and load it up, no one asks for your name or dats. Here's the kicker. You could have millions of dollars worth of crypto in one of those little wallets, but how are you going to turn that into paper funny money? That is, for example, if you want to cash out and buy a house or a car, whatever. Well, the new rule says that if you move your currency from one of those hard wallets, which, like I said, can be anonymous as long as you don't put your name on it, well, to turn some of that crypto into cash, you have to move or send some of your cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, whatever, to a coin exchange like Coinbase. There's dozens of other ones, but Coinbase is the most well-known, although their fees are very high and people really don't like them that much. But they were first on the scene, so they got some name fame. And the proposed law says that in order for you to send your crypto to the exchange, and of course the exchange then will turn it into dollars and send it to the bank account of your choice. Well, the rule says you'll have to tell Coinbase your identity, and you'll have to prove it with a scan of your passport. So in effect, what the new regs are hoping to do is identify everyone who's got cryptocurrencies in anonymous wallets, with exchanges like Coinbase forced to report all your holdings to the IRS and the Treasury Department. So they can tax them. What else? Because, you know, it doesn't matter if you've got billions in crypto in a hard wallet. If it's anonymous, you can't get taxed. But you can get taxed if and when you switch your crypto to U.S. dollars. So then again, the question is, will it kill Bitcoin and crypto? Absolutely not. In fact, it's been estimated that probably 95% of the crypto out there was bought directly from exchanges like Coinbase. And in order to buy, you have to give them your credit card or bank transfer data. So they already know who 95% of their customers are. And those exchanges based in the States like Coinbase report back to the Treasury Department and the IRS. So people do pay taxes on their crypto transactions just as they would if they were in and out of the stock market. And for that small 5% who probably don't want anybody to know how much crypto they have, if they want to cash out in dollars or euros, whatever, they'll always find a bank somewhere in another country, maybe the Cayman Islands, Bahamas, whatever, that'll do anonymous business with them. Oh, and another thing people don't realize, more and more businesses are accepting crypto directly. In other words, a year or so ago, if you wanted to buy anything online, you did it with a credit card or PayPal, whatever. But now more and more, in fact, thousands of companies are accepting crypto directly. So that not only completely bypasses the banking system, it completely bypasses the crypto exchanges like Coinbase too. An example of that is the travel consolidator, Travelod.com. You've heard of Priceline and Expedia, Obits, CheapAir, and a lot of the travel consolidators, right? Well, Travelod.com just started accepting cryptocurrencies. So, for example, if you wanted to book a resort or a cruise or a flight, you can pay directly in cryptocurrency. Again, bypassing PayPal, credit cards, banks, and that's the beauty of crypto. And in doing that, it puts a nice buffer layer between you and the ass wipes in government trying to collect your data. So just know there are ways to remain completely anonymous, no matter what regulations come down from the U.S. or even internationally. Oh, and if you're coming to my Expat Insider Seminar, you'll find out all about this in great detail. You'll hear it from me and our crypto experts who talk at the seminar. That'd be Captain Mango, who offers that very excellent Crypto for Beginners course, Bitcoin Dan, who is absolutely one of the top 10 crypto experts in the world. In fact, he was the very first person in the world to teach an accredited university cryptocurrency course. And we've got Oscar the Miner, too. And he was one of the very first people to mine cryptocurrencies way back when, something like 10 or 12 years ago. So if you're coming down to my Expat Insider Seminar, you'll be learning about crypto and the secrets of crypto from the very best. So bottom line, as to Mike's question, will crypto be destroyed by the government and banks? Well, they'd sure like to kill it. Because for one, it eliminates the middleman, and that's the banks. And that's how they make their dough, being the intermediary for all those financial transactions. So in a way, Bitcoin and cryptos are a mortal threat to banks. So they're going to do everything in their power to get their lobbyists to bribe Congress to try to strangle crypto with heavy legislation. Though the problem for them is crypto is international. And when one country's government comes down hard on crypto, like Britain is right now, others see an opportunity and pick up the slack. Now, in Britain right now, they're making certain Bitcoin and crypto transactions illegal. I don't know if you heard that or not. Restrictive legislation for crypto just came through in the UK last week. And you know what? That did not dent the going price of crypto at all, because everybody said the same thing. We'll just skip doing crypto business in the UK and do it in any of a number of crypto-friendly countries. I mean, look, after this COVIDia thing, almost every country's bottom line is hurting. Industries shut, tourism shut, bars and restaurants shut. So any country that tries to throttle the Bitcoin and crypto business is shooting themselves in the foot. Because if you've been following the trends, Bitcoin and crypto just happen to be the fastest growing financial and investment strategy on the planet. And only countries that are trying to hold on to the past are trying to regulate it. But then again, governments are mostly staffed with bureaucrats who graduate in the bottom 10% of their classes. So you can expect them to do a lot of very stupid things. But governments in general, like any metastatic cancer, they're very good at growing and expanding until they kill off the host. Isn't that the history of every government that was ever in existence? But you knew that already, right? All right, then comes this email from Fred. He says, Johnny, I'm trying to figure out how to pull the plug on WhatsApp, but it's hard because so many people use it, much more so where you are in Latin America. But with WhatsApp's recent move to let their parent company, Fakebook, have access to all your email addresses and who knows what else, I'm really trying to figure it out. Seems like you should try to get the most important people you contact, like your lawyer, to get Signal or Telegram accounts. They're just like WhatsApp, but very secure. And then get them out of your WhatsApp contact list. Then you could just use WhatsApp for more casual, fluffy conversations like replying to ads or calling a restaurant. All right, Fred, let me throw in my 2 cents here. That's exactly what I've been doing. I keep the WhatsApp accounts for, you know, plumbers and the cleaning lady and stuff. And for the essential private stuff, I've hooked up with that Signal app. And you know, when you're looking at it, it seems almost exactly like WhatsApp, except instead of being green, it's all blue. Oh, and when you first sign up for Signal or Telegram, it'll ask you if you want to merge your contact list, and I say do it. And that doesn't damage your anonymity or privacy either, because you won't be able to talk or communicate with anyone on that contact list unless they download the Signal or Telegram app. And then, and only then, will those people show up when you hit the Signal or, if you're using Telegram, icon. You see, merging your contact list is a great time saver, because then you won't have to retype the name and phone numbers of everyone you want to include in the new Signal or Telegram app. All right, then Fred says, by the way, Johnny, here's a little something I researched about the COVIDiot stuff. In South Dakota, which has never locked down anything at all, as far as I can see, it suffered a bunch of deaths in recent months, but now is way down from their all-time high daily deaths. Their total deaths per capita have never reached as high as New York State and are about 2.6 per 10,000 people, which is more than California. And California, you know, has gone through some horrendous social contortions, closing of most everything, including schools, businesses, social events, etc. And we know also, statistically, those 2.6 per 10,000 affected are likely to be very much older folks with serious health problems, etc. As for me, I'm 78 and generally healthy, if you don't count the prostate cancer and a couple of vertebral fractures I've had. But I'm not prejudiced against the elderly. But still, I think one needs to make some sort of balance between a few people dying and shutting down the whole society in general. Funny how when we're not talking about COVID, the society makes some very logical decisions too. For example, we allow automobiles to operate. They kill many more people than COVID ever will. And think about it, with all the lockdowns in California, those geniuses have only been able to shave 0.26. That's about a quarter of a person per 1,000 off of the death rate that would have happened without their interference. Just saying, Johnny. Signed, Fred from Northern California. Hey, Fred, you're right. And think about this. They won't let you on a plane even if you're completely asymptomatic and you test positive, which could be up to a 40% error, we know. But you can go on a plane if you've got tuberculosis, AIDS, intestinal parasites. You know, half of the third world has parasites. They don't bar you from flying if you've got epilepsy or organ transplants. Those are people on heavy immunosuppressant drugs, right? Which makes you very susceptible to bacterial and viral infection. The fact is, airlines let people with 1,001 different diseases fly every day. People with contagious diseases, too. They even let schizophrenics, psychotics, and sociopaths fly daily. Just look at all the politicians flying first class on your dime. Talk about adding insult to injury. Yeah, how about that? The sociopaths fly first class. By the way, as for tuberculosis, TB, according to the WHO, the World Health Organization, 1.21 million people die of TB every year. By the way, TB is contagious, yet there are no airline flight restrictions. Oh, and by the way, did you know that 1.8 million people a year die from diarrhea-related diseases? And they still let those people on airlines. I mean, have you checked your in-flight bathroom lately? Ugh. Oh, and respiratory tract infections in general kill 4 million people a year. And they're contagious. They're still allowed to fly. Want proof? Well, next time you're at an airport or are flying, check out how many people are hacking into a snot rag. Even before the COVIDia thing, every plane has had its annoying chronic hacker. And the death rate for respiratory infections is something like 5 times the COVID death rate. But they're flying around in planes all the time. You ever sit next to one of them? Man, you just want to slap them. But they've got their rights, huh? But somehow you and I, even if we've got zero symptoms and test PCR positive, we automatically get the scarlet letter and we're booted. By the way, I'm looking at the stats today. They say that something like almost 2 million people have died from COVID-19. BS. Eventually, when they tell the truth, you'll find it's more like half that amount. Mostly the over 70 crowd. Turns out more than 1 million of those have died from compromising chronic illnesses. And incidentally, were also found to have tested positive for COVID. So obviously, COVID killed them, right? And now for the capper. Did you know that the latest statistics show that in the UK, the United Kingdom, the average life expectancy for males is 79.5 years. And for females in the UK, 83.1 years, according to a site called World Data Info. You got that right. 79.5 years for men, 83.1 for women. And with all the gobbledygook fake news out there, you'd think COVID was decimating the world. Well, get this. According to BBC News, the average age of those who died with COVID-19 in the UK is 79 for men and 84 for women. Yep, according to these stats, if you have COVID and die in the UK, you actually live just as long as the average person does in the UK. What the f***? I repeat, the average male Brit dies at age 79.5. The average age of death for males who died with COVID in the UK is 79. Duh. And for women in the UK, average lifespan, 83.1 years. However, if you're a woman in the UK and you die of COVID, your average age is 84. I say double. What the f***? Now, if you want to look at these stats yourself, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com, and I'll send you the links. But you do see what's happening here, right? If you die of COVID in the UK, you don't die younger than the average life expectancy. Meanwhile, they've got some of the strictest lockdowns in the world. All I've got to say is,
hey, Mo! Stop.
I mean, really, what else can you say? Except that the year 2020 has been an IQ test for the public, and 95% of you has failed. Seems the definition of average, 100 IQ that would be, has dropped down a notch to 70 or 80. By the way, I just looked up the definition of a moron. It says here, it was once applied to people with an IQ of between 51 and 70, being superior in one degree or another to imbecile, whose IQ is between 26 and 50, which is superior in some degree to the term idiot, whose IQ is between 0 and 25. Then it shows a photo of a convention of morons. It's a photo of Congress. All right, so I made the photo part up. The shoe certainly fits. There'd certainly be no way to disprove it. Meanwhile comes this news from El Salvador, dated January 5th. It says, a court in El Salvador found ex-president Tony Saca guilty, along with his wife, Angela Ligala Saca, of illegal enrichment to the tune of $4.4 million. The court found that Saca could not explain the origin of another $6.5 million in income he made while president. Sounds like he's taking a page from Obama's playbook. Then it says, this comes in addition to a 10-year prison sentence for corruption, having been ordered to return some $160 million to the nation. I know. It's hard to believe that a tiny country like El Salvador, with a population of 6.5 million, that's not even as big as Chicago, that a president could steal $350 million. Though, as mentioned in a previous show, that kind of money does not come from the public coffers, from the taxes. It's money that idiot, moron, first world countries donate and gift to these dickheads in order to get them to play ball with first world countries like the U.S. during UN, IMF, and World Bank votes and such. Oh, and you might be interested to note that two other El Salvadorian presidents are under investigation for corruption. Francisco Flores, who recently died but was living under house arrest for years in his million-dollar beach house compound. Then there's ex-president Mario Funes, who held the top office from 2009 to 2014, who fled to Nicaragua after he was caught red-handed, stealing in upwards of $10 million. So he's living like a sultan of swing in Nicaragua now, where he was granted asylum, allowing him to avoid facing trial back home. Yep, that's how malignant, pustulant Latin American political douchebags make their side deals. It's funny, too, because the average Latin American, even the lower class sweaty masses, don't seem to take it personally. Those elected thieves are sort of local heroes, and when you see one in Costco with his fleet of SUVs and pot-bellied bodyguards, people don't get disgusted and shout insults at him. Well, I do. But instead, they go up and shake his hand and ask for his autograph. I'm not kidding. I've seen it a number of times. And I suppose it's because political corruption's so well entrenched. People just expect it. Though you've heard me say this before, there's a kind of a round number, 20%, that people sort of expect is a politician's usual skim. Any more than that, the people get pissed, a new administration comes in, they go after the old guy, they confiscate all his properties, and by then he's usually out of the country in Nicaragua or Panama or a place nearby where he's transferred his millions. After all, he's got to grease the skids for a soft landing after he's become persona non grata in his own country. Oh, and just one more thing, you longtime listeners might remember me saying more than a few times, that becoming a politician in Latin America is actually a full employment plan for all their friends, cronies, and relatives. And there's no better proof of that than what they nailed this ex-president of Salvador for. According to legal documents, it says he pled guilty to charges that connected him with the diversion of more than $300 million from government coffers to the benefit of his own businesses, along with government contracts and freebies to friends, relatives, and cronies. His problem being, he didn't obey the unofficial rules of skim. He took way more than 20%. He was a glutton.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.